from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
It's a Monday, and I am back to not only just torture Cliff, but to torture everybody else. And speaking of Cliff, hi here, Cliff. It's Honeycool.
I am fine. How are you? Some scientists came out and enveloped us all over the place, at least down here it is. Well, you got some up there in Portland?
Yeah. In fact, I came up with a... Okay. You heard the controversy over waterboarding. I came up with actually a better method of getting the truth out of somebody.
What's
you
that?
Give them a toothache.
That'll do it. Believe me, I don't know anybody that can handle a toothache at all.
Oh, I tell you, my toothache went for, almost 3 weeks, including the dentist going in there and trying to figure out what's causing it and replacing a huge filling, and it still didn't help. And it's like, oh, my God, it's worse than menopause.
Okay, I don't know. I haven't experienced either that. I have experienced the toothache, though. We have the same problem with the toothache. Interestingly enough, mine, I had it for about 4 or 5 days where it was bad, and then it went away completely. And then last night it just came back again, and I've got it again today, so I'm living on drugs.
Yeah, I can just see it now in the news. A mysterious free-roaming toothache is plaguing the county.
Yeah, it's almost like it's true that it's a catching thing. I know it isn't, but you never know.
Well, that's true. Anyways, down to business. Give us a call at 646-721-9887. We got a couple things on the lineup today, and if there's something we're not talking about and you'd like to, let us know. You can either join us in the chat room, or better yet, give us a call, 646-721-9887. We're going to touch a little bit on the economy. Of course, Obama in the news again. Michael Bloomberg.
Before you go on, mention the fact that people can get a hold of us on Skype, because that way it's free. I mean, you've got to call us on a telephone, and sometimes for some people that's going to cost money. I know most people's phones are unlimited nowadays, but if you are concerned about that, give us a call on Skype, because then it's absolutely free.
Absolutely. So there's many, many ways that you can reach us, and then if you're listening to the program on the archives, you can always send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. And as I was going to say too, Michael Bloomberg, who I'm hoping always keeps his shoes clean because he sticks his foot in his mouth too much. And we have a What the Heck Are They Thinking segment, and we'll have all that and more right after this.
Good dog, Skippy. Yes, Skippy is a very good dog, and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative-free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them, and I'm sure you will too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
Yeah, check them out, and I think you'll be impressed of all the different styles and flavors that they have, and they're all handmade by Tom and Kathy in Eugene and available at select stores in Lane County or available online at dancingdogcookies.com.
If you want to go online, by the way, check out the rainbow-colored cookies. So they're called Country Fair or something like that. That's the neatest ones. They all different colors and different shapes, and $10.99. I guess it's a bag. It's not necessarily a pound, but it's available. And you know, the thing is, regardless, the price has not come into this whole thing, because this is a treat. This is a treat you're giving your dogs for, I don't know, being good, being bad, whatever you want to treat them for. So price doesn't enter it.
Bad dog, Jeffy, here you go. Good dog. Yeah, but check them out. They're really kind of cool. A couple things I wanted to talk about, and then getting organized here. As you probably heard, Obama's getting a lot of wrath from his "you didn't build it" speech. And what's really interesting about that now is they're now determining, or they're saying that if you didn't appreciate that speech, then you're racist.
What?
Yeah, they pulled the race card quite a bit, and it's getting kind of old. But I was thinking about this the other day when they were talking about it on the talk shows, is that I would think that as often as they throw the race card, it works against, or in my opinion, it works against wanting to put somebody of color or any type of race into a high office, because you'd be afraid of pulling the race card off. You can't do anything if you're going to keep pulling the race card.
Well,
that makes sense?
In the first place, it's a moot point, because we go through that with everything. We started way back, I remember when everybody was all panicky because we were going to put a Catholic in office. Everything else, everything is a detriment, or it can be not a detriment. It doesn't make any difference. I don't think the general public, I don't think the American people are that dumb that they're going to even worry about that. I think that's not going to be a factor in what's going on. The only factor I saw on television today, they've got an ad on television where it says that Obama has, going back all his life, he can't prove that nobody's ever seen. Now, they've seen it on video on the internet, but nobody's actually seen his birth certificate, and he can't prove anything about where his mother was growing up, and they're saying that I don't know if she was born in Africa or not, but she grew up a part of her time there. I mean, it's all, nothing can be proved. He has no background that can be proved. Nothing can be justified as far as who he is, and we don't know who he is. And they're saying that we shouldn't be putting someone in office that we don't know, and we can't justify anything with his background. He hasn't got anything that can be traced and put into, I don't know, and he's a loss. So I think we should just say, okay, goodbye, and let the Democrats come up with somebody new. They'd probably do better.
Well, like I said before, that, I mean, we're too late in the game now to, even if they do prove that he was born in another country, too late in the game now, but you can prevent it for next time, and Congress can come up and say that anybody coming into any office has to prove anything, or have to, like we have to do to go work at McDonald's, have to prove you have the right to work there. But one thing I wanted to kind of say real quick here, because I have a little parody I wanted to kind of share with everybody, back in the with his recent comments, which apparently has really ticked off a lot of people about, you know, you didn't build it, and so I kind of. Anyway, sort of get a little parody, kind of rub it in a little bit. Here we go.
You didn't build that. You didn't build that. You didn't build that. You didn't build that.
My.
You didn't build that.
So hard, make me say, oh my Lord, thank you.
You didn't build that.
Build that.
I told you, homeboy. You didn't build that.
Now they probably say that's racist.
I didn't sound anything racist to me, but it didn't. I know. There's a lot of people that are talking about that particular thing, and it's bad, I think, that he even brought it up, and it's going to be taken wrong, and it's going to be out of context to a certain extent. But you can't really take that out of context and have it come out right. I mean, if you put it in context, it's bad, and if you take it out of context, it's bad, because what he said was bad. What he said was ridiculous. I mean, he's telling people who've put their whole life and their whole energy into building a company, and they're telling him it wasn't their fault, that they didn't do it, that somebody else did it, that everybody else and their brother who built a bridge did this. I mean, they helped, yes, everybody helped, but this is a lot of people are building companies, small companies, and scraping out a time. They're working very hard for it, and he's giving him no credit at all. It was going to basically leave him with no credit at all, believe me, no credibility whatsoever, because he's playing games with their life.
Well, and trying to emphasize the whole point, which has been, if you get back and listen to the sound bites of the 2008 elections, he's been hinting that he wants a more socialist style government. You know, everybody, in fact, if you listen to the whole speech of the "I Didn't Build This," he says that America is going to rise or fall together. Well, I'm sorry, but I took offense to that in the fact that it sounded defeatist. You know, yes, together as one nation, we will prosper. But that's the thing. We have to work together. It's not government handing out everything, or the government also directing our lives. And that's kind of where it's starting to go. I mean, regulations and such are getting to the point that we're falling apart as a nation.
Absolutely. We're not doing things right at all. It's right now we are going to do it together, whether you like it or not. It's definitely going to happen together, because everybody's going broke together, and like it or not, it's happening. We've got entire cities, we've got entire states, we've got 32 states right now that are financially broke. They are absolutely broke. States can't declare bankruptcy, so they haven't done that, but they're actually broke. There are 32 states out of 50 that are broke, and we've got to do something about that. And our state credit rating is going down by the thousands. I mean, it's just insane and very sad about this whole thing. Cities are going broke. We've got several fairly major sized cities that have declared bankruptcy already, and there's going to be more and more that are doing it.
Yeah, under the I know that it's pretty hard to say that, you know, that, well, you blame it on one president, but he is the guy in the top office. And in fact, on that same note, I want to kind of throw this out there to the listening audience and to you, Cliff. You know, we're supposed to be a republic. We're not supposed to be a monarchy. But yet, if you listen to the news, people are sounding like Obama is the only one that's running the country, and we have to do what he says. You know, this president is making the country do this, or this president is making the country do that. I thought that this president, or any president, didn't have the power, per se, to rule.
Well, technically speaking, the president does not have that power, but the president is taking that power. He's overriding Congress, he's overriding the Constitution, he's overriding everything, and he's taking that power in his own hands. Technically, if you really probably get around to it, if we change presidents, the new president will go in there and just cancel all this thing, because most of it's against the law anyway. But while the president is there doing it, he can say so, and people will accept it, at least for a while. But the point is, what he's doing, he's had 4 years, or almost 4 years now, he's had 3.5 years, let's say, to turn the economy around. In 2007, in 2008, right there, that's when it all fell apart, just absolutely fell apart. And he's tried to blame that on President Bush. I don't believe it was blamed on President Bush. It may have started there and started getting really bad there. But from that point on, that Bush was no longer there, he should have taken it and fixed it. And that's what he said he was going to do. He has done nothing except spend billions and billions and billions of dollars and done nothing. It hasn't fixed nothing. It's not repaired. And we're still way, way down below what we're supposed to be. So we've got thousands of people out of work. The economy is down. Look at the real estate values are just absolutely in the toilet. And nothing is being done to fix it. It's just not being repaired. So who do we get to repair it? We've got to change the people in office, not only from the president, but to Congress all the way down, and get them changed. We've got a few of them that were changed last election period, but got a lot of people to change there now, and I think we're going to have a lot of people change if you take a look at it.
Well, and like Lars Larson was commenting, he was interviewing, I can't remember who the senator was, about the last November's election and saying that, you know, senator, the people sent a message, and the senator just went, what message was that, Lars? In other words, there's so much power up there in the government that they don't really care. But to kind of go back a little bit on what you're saying with the stimulus and everything, and one of the things that I just thought of that isn't happening is follow through. Like on the stimulus package, and I don't have the sound bite, I wish I did, that they said that they were going to closely monitor the money that was being spent so it wasn't spent on frivolous projects, and states were going to be held accountable. Well, a lot of the money went for infrastructure, like keeping teachers at work and other projects that didn't create jobs. So my point is that if they would have monitored the money so where it was supposed to go and the purpose it was originally designed to go for, maybe the stimulus would have helped a little better. But instead, all you do is just throw money that didn't really have much of a return, in my opinion.
But that's not true. It didn't necessarily add jobs, but it did keep jobs, and supposedly that was supposed to be what saved the world, saved the United States, is keeping people's jobs, but it hasn't kept people's jobs. The states are still doing it quietly in the background or whatever. They're firing people. They're letting people go. Look at our own state and how much we're letting the sheriff's department has gone way down. We're only filling a third of the beds in our county jails, and we're not getting anywhere. And we're still going under. We haven't made it yet. We are one of the states that isn't so far in the hole as to be necessary to declare bankruptcy. One of the few, but the other states are doing it every day. I mean, there are states, for example, one of the things the states can't declare bankruptcy, but there's one state that has decided, okay, he's taken all of the state employees and put them on a minimum wage of $7.25 an hour as of July 6th. They cut entire states' workers to minimum wage of $7.25 an hour, and that's saving the state $16.8 million for a deficit budget. But you can't do that forever. I mean, these people were making $25, $30 an hour, and all of a sudden they got to go down. But it's better than firing them all. I think it's better than firing them all. You're keeping people there, and you're trying to work your way back up. And I think most of the people, you know, that are getting their wages cut, they're aware that it's better than nothing. But it's still going to be very hard to get around. And the thing is, it's going to happen that everybody's going to have to take a big chunk of the responsibility, I guess is what I want to use, because all of a sudden these people who were making $25 an hour, $20 an hour, making $7.25, they're not going to be able to pay certain bills. They're not going to be able to pay the huge mortgages that they have. And so consequently, the people who hold those mortgages are either going to have to foreclose, or they're going to have to adjust those mortgages. Sooner or later, people are going to learn, banks are going to learn, whoever's going to learn, that you're going to have to adjust those mortgages, not just foreclose on everybody. I mean, there are states I forgot one. There's one state where 40% of the houses are empty in the entire state, and that can't continue on because
isn't that Detroit?
No, I don't think it's Detroit. It was another one, but it's probably very close to that in Detroit, for that matter. It's terrible because people can't do that. I mean, we can't live that way. Things have got to start turning around, and I don't think they're going to turn around until we get a different president in there or someone else in there to make the decisions. Because
well, and to set up the. I'm going to use that as a lead-in from the next story, by the way, and also to relay what one of the people in the chat room are saying, is that, you know, we can't – a service economy can't support the nation, which is true because the service doesn't create jobs per se. Well, in a way it does, but for the most part it doesn't. We need to create jobs and put hands back in – money back in the hands of people. And one of the things that we need to do is we need to get government regulation out of it. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of point out in that regard is that Michael Bloomberg is back in the news again, which I said on the onset of the program. As a quick little recap, if you recall in New York City, Michael Bloomberg limited how much soda you can buy by putting a 16-ounce limit. You can't buy anything bigger than that. Well, if the mayor, I'm pausing because I can't believe that he's actually doing
this. First of all, while you're thinking for a second, that's ridiculous because they're going to get around that. The McDonald's is going to say, okay, I can't sell you anything bigger than a 16-ounce soda pop, but I'll sell you three of those. And
exactly.
they're going to find ways of getting around it, just like they're going to there are so many laws can't do this. Regulations cannot do this. For example, if you make it against the law to buy a gun in the United States, thinking the idea of taking all the guns off the market, that's not going to happen. Crooks or bad people are going to get guns. They're going to find ways to get guns if they have to build the damn things themselves. They're going to find ways to have a 16-ounce or bigger soda pop if they have to build it or make it themselves. You're not going to control the United States with rules and regulations. You've got to control the United States with logic and real, actual things that are going to mean something to them.
Well, that's what I'm kind of getting at, is the micromanaging or adding more and more regulations. Now, this is what Michael Bloomberg has decided to do, is that besides telling people that we want to limit how much soda you can drink because we want to make it more in your face as far as how much sugar you're taking in, as if it's any of his business to get right down to it, he's now telling if you have a child and you're in a hospital, he says that he's offering an incentive in which the infant formula will be locked away at hospitals to encourage breastfeeding for new mothers. And then if a mother decides that she doesn't want to do that and wants to use the formula, that the hospital will require to give the mother a lecture telling her why it is better to breastfeed than to use a formula.
All we're doing now is raising the cost of hospital care, which is our big problem in the first place. I mean, this is ridiculous for a mayor or a governor or a president. Doesn't make any difference who. It's ridiculous for them to decide how we're supposed to live in any consideration. And that's why we've got to get rid of the rules and regulations. We've got regulations are costing us $400 billion a year, and that's ridiculous because, I mean, that's how much it's costing us. In actual cash, because we are paying fines, we are doing things that we shouldn't have to do, and all because of the rules and regulations that probably Obama mostly has allowed to happen. They aren't all originated by Obama, because we have people, you know, interestingly enough, the Congress sits down and thinks about these things, and some of them are very well-founded. Some of them are thought out and have basis and a very good idea, but that isn't the way to do it. You can't raise enough in taxes, for example, to pay for the government. You've got to slow down the government. You've got to slow down the spending. You've got to slow down how much money is being spent. You've got to stop borrowing money from China or whomever you're borrowing from, because China is not, by the way, the only people who we're borrowing from. But we've got to modify and moderate what we're spending, and that's how we've got to change things.
Well, yeah, and there's a point where, you know, the state and the government should not be micromanaging. You know, I mean, yeah, people do stupid things. You can't outlaw being stupid. I'm sorry.
That's true.
Yeah, you can't pass a law to fix stupid. I mean, people do a bunch of dumb stuff, and I'm going somewhere with all that. And first thing I'm going is 646-721-9887. If you'd like to give us a call to join us on this or anything else that we're talking about. Micromanaging of people, and next thing that we're going to see is that there's going to be an age limit on smartphones, because people are now walking out into the streets and in front of railroad cars and everything else, listening to music and texting on their smartphones, to the point that, yes, somebody passed a law saying you can't do that, and that was New Jersey, which bans texting while walking.
But you see, that's not the way to control it. That's not the way to help do something about it. You don't do it by making a regulation or making a rule, because you can't, like you say, you can't legislate the stupidity. What you do is simply let it happen, and when people start seeing enough on the news about people being killed by doing dumb things, they're going to start thinking a little bit. And if they don't start thinking, I'm sorry, I'm going to be in trouble, but I don't care. If they're too stupid to think about things and too stupid to stupid enough to walk out in the middle of traffic with headphones on, then let them get hit.
Now, what happened to, you know, your parents teaching you to stop, look, and listen?
Well, that's part of it, but it's even more than that. It's logic. It's considering who you are and what you are, and that you're fragile. I can see some younger people that I know, young kids who don't think of it that way. They think they're going to live forever. But if a few of them get killed, then they're going to think twice. And people, it's going to take something like that to happen. But that's actually the least of our worries right now. What's going to happen at the moment is financially we're going to be in so much trouble that people are going to start committing suicide. I know people do that all the time. You see all the big dives in the economy. You see people diving out of business stores and business windows and things like that, too. It's just a thing that happens. People get panicky.
Go ahead.
People get panicky when they don't have any money. When all of their money disappears and you can't do anything about it, then people happen to get very upset and very panicky. It doesn't make any sense, because it isn't, you know, killing themselves is not going to help them. It's definitely not going to help the people around them that are depending maybe a little bit on them for their help and for their livelihood. So that isn't going to help anybody. But, you know, we've got, you know, the United States is supposed to have a tremendous amount of get together and working on things and helping things, and we aren't doing it. We're panicking right now.
We're panicking. I mean, when the economy is bad and you're having trouble finding a job, everything's going up. I mean, I look at my house, for example. My property taxes went up again. My value went down by about over $20,000, but my property taxes kept going up. The utilities are expensive. Those keep going up, and even though we're cutting back to the point that we're practically not using them, it's like, what do you do? I mean, you work, both of us in the family, we work. I work long hours, 60, 70 hours a week, and we're just barely breaking even. And all it takes is one little tragedy, and we could lose our house because we don't have any savings anymore. The economy is really bad. And what burns me is that, like, especially in the little town in Eugene, a population of 150-some-odd thousand people, is it doesn't seem like even though they're cutting sheriff, they're cutting all this, it still doesn't seem like they've got their heads pulled out of their butts to encourage businesses to come in and build the economy, help cut some of the taxes and help the people there. You know, it's just like the state of Oregon last year when they passed Measure 5657 to help the schools, because they figured that that would help, that would be the cure-all for the funding and give more of a stable base for the schools. So we went ahead and voted it in, and then they said, this isn't going to do anything, because as it turned out, we miscalculated, because there's not enough population of businesses left in Oregon to generate the revenue that we were hoping.
Well, and the economy being bad and the news as the way it's going is going to keep people from moving here, too. But you've got to consider what you've got. You can't consider what's going to be there. That's not there. You've got to consider what you have and base your economy on that. But we're cutting way back. We've cut our finances and everything way back. But it's still not far enough, and it's going to be a lot worse. That's why I say everybody's going to have to take a cut. I mean, it's going to be soon. The only people that are going to be in the state of Oregon are going to be crooks, because, you know, we don't have any jails. We don't have any officers to do anything about it. And so they get away with everything. So what's going to happen?
Well, we got jails. I can't remember what city it's in, but they have a brand new jail built, but they don't have any money to run it. So it sits empty.
Well, we don't have enough money to run the ones we have already. We're only using a third of our beds in the jails that we've had already. They're cutting way back too. So it's not just building new jails. Building a jail is the easiest part. Operating it is another point entirely.
Exactly. Well, and I'm going to use that as a lead into another segment. Kind of speaking of regulations and ridiculous. And all right, where are the okay.
You have got to be kidding me. What the heck were they thinking? Can you actually believe they did that?
It's Robin's What the Heck Are They Thinking Award, where Robin picks out some of the dumbest and most ridiculous headlines of the week. And now, with this week's picks, here's Robin.
Okay, and this award goes out to Jackson County, which sent a man to jail for 30 days. You ready for this, Cliff?
I'm ready.
Okay, you're sitting down.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm building up the tension and the excitement here. Okay, anyways, for collecting rainwater on his own property.
What?
Yes.
Rainwater? What was he doing with this rainwater? Was he trying to feed it to other people or something like that, or just for himself?
Just for himself. He... the state of Oregon won a court battle against Gary Hamilton, who has been collecting rainwater on his 170-acre ranch, saying that the water belongs to the state under the state water rights laws. Basically, what he did is he put a couple 55-gallon barrels underneath his downspout to collect the water for later use.
Well, many, many, many people do that. I could see it if he was building a lake with it or something like that. You're going to collect hundreds of thousands of gallons. Or if we were collecting it to sell it to someone else later on, or right away, or whatever, but because then it hasn't been tested and don't know what's in it. But this is ridiculous. What's happening? Who's bringing this suit? Who's doing this? I mean,
this is Jackson County. In fact, they're saying that they're putting 9 misdemeanor charges under a 1925 law for having what the state water managers calls 3 illegal reservoirs on his property and for filling the reservoirs with rainwater and snow runoff.
That's well, I get you're stretching it an awful lot to say that the state owns that water, because until the water goes into the ground, the state doesn't own it. Simple as that. As long as he stopped it from going into the ground, he owns it.
Well, that's the argument right there, that the state is saying that they own the water. But,
no,
yeah, I understand. I agree with your argument that, you know, when it comes down from the sky, nobody owns it really, you know, until it touches something. But, in fact, well, technically, the way this is set up, it touched his roof first before it even went into the ground.
Well, see, if he were taking it out of the ground, I can see that, because there is precedent set for taking it out of the ground because you're taking it away from the rivers and the such and things that the state does own, basically, I guess. I guess the state's own it, but you're not doing that. You're stopping it before it gets there. And unless you're making, see, if you're putting it into an actual reservoir, into an actual lake on the property, then you are stopping. You could get in trouble because you're keeping it from going through, and it's on the ground, and it's, I guess it would be the state's property. But if you're keeping it in a rain barrel and just putting it, there are whole economies that are built with that thought. I mean, there are houses built with rain barrels or such tanks that hold the water for you, because the water, that's the way you've got to get water. Water isn't there other than that. So they save it for months and months and months. And there are
also the Tom Paul, administrator of the Oregon Water Resources Department, claims that Harrison has been violating the state's water use laws by diverting water from streams running into the Big Butte River. I don't see how he can actually, even on 170 acres, be diverting that much water that's going to make any difference at all.
Now, that he could do. That he could do, because I lived on a farm once, and we had a stream running through our property, and we could divert that, and that could cause a lot of trouble on down the line, because there were a lot of people who were on that same stream. If we diverted all the water off of that stream, it would stop a lot of people from getting water. So if he's doing that, but if that's a different story, then they could possibly come up with enough to get somewhere with that. But with it just enough for himself to use, that's wrong.
Well, and the way I would look at it is that if the state is claiming that the water that is coming from his property, whether it be rainwater or from snow or whatever, and they're saying he doesn't have a right to do it, well, I would say, okay, if I don't own it, then I have a right to say whether or not I want it on my property or not. And if you're claiming that you own it, then you need to pay me rent for it being there. I mean, I know that argument will fly, but, you know.
Well, it might, though. That might be the argument to go with, because, you know, the precedent has already been set that you don't own the water that's on the property, because that's in California and Arizona and in those areas. There's quite a bit of diligence put into the fact that you don't own that water. You can't dig a hole and collect the water, or you can't collect the water in your own lake, because that's money, that's water that's filling the river that's going to be used downstream. So there is somewhat you can do, but you can collect a part of it. I mean, that's where you can collect a tank full of water, a couple, three or four tanks full of water. You can have hundreds of gallons of water on hand for use yourself later on, but there's a limit. I mean, I don't know what the limit would be, but there is a limit that you can't keep so much of it away from the river itself, because you're keeping the river. If you're making a difference in the height of the river itself, then they can do something about it.
Well, I think that. And I'm going by memory, because I think I looked this up one time, because in Eugene, it costs so much for water. The water itself is cheap, like about $10 a month. But when you add the sewer runoff fees, the sewer fees and everything else that are based on the water, you know, I thought about, you know, maybe, I mean, because in Oregon here, it rains a lot, saving some of that water so I can water the lawn. And I think I read somewhere it said that the most you can collect is maybe 3 barrels full or something.
Well, now you see, you're talking about watering the lawn, and you're doing, you know, there are cities, there are whole areas where people are doing this all the time. For example, in Sunnyside, California, I lived there for a while, and they have a whole system where there's collecting what they call brown water or drain. It's basically water that's been through the system and through the and it's been cleaned up, but it's not clean enough for drinking. And they can put that in tanks and take it out and deliver it to you to put on the lawn and things like that. So there's a whole thing with that. It's an industry, and you can do that, but you've got to start separating. We're not at that point, I don't think, yet, although, well, not right now, especially because we've got water coming out our ears, but because of the rain that we've had this year. But for several years in a row, we were getting low on water. But there's a whole industry that can be made for using what they call brown water. Anyway, the water out of the sewers.
Yeah. Well, technically, if you want to get technical about it, a swimming pool in your backyard could be considered water harvesting or illegal water storage.
Say again?
The pool in your backyard?
Oh, yeah. There's got to be a limit to how big it is and how much you're saving, and there's got to be some sort of a regulation already on the books as to how big that can be before they can put you into trouble. So it'd be interesting to know how much he's actually putting away. You know, if he's trying to make a whole lake out of it, that's another story. But if he's just saving a few barrels, I don't know how they can get him for that. It's hard to say.
Now, it's just that, you know, gets back to the main question of who owns the water. And, you know, again, apparently the state says, we do, but we're going to cash you for it anyways.
It's a real thing about who owns the water and who doesn't own the water. Having lived in Needles, California for 4 or 5 years there that I was there, I gained a big respect for who owns the water. I mean, there's daily rulings from the federal government and the state government as to who owns the water, who has the rights to that water. I mean, you can, if you move to Needles, there would be a lot more people living in Needles, but they can't, because you could buy a piece of property, but you can't put a well on it. You can't put water on it. You can't get the water out of the river or anything. You have no water rights. And so water rights have to be bought as a separate purchase when you buy a piece of property. So it's something we don't think about here because we haven't had to over a period of time, but obviously maybe we're going to have to start thinking about it.
Well, you never know. I mean, I lived in an area one time where water is very, very scarce. And we relied on well water for drinking water. And one time that water ran out, and it's amazing how much you take for granted, especially when it comes down to water.
Absolutely, and water does, you know, it comes out of the ground, but it doesn't always there. And not only that, but you may have to spend a lot of money cleaning the water to take out of the ground, because it can't always depend on the fact that it's good water. I mean, look at what happened in Portland, I think it was. Just recently they had to boil the water for a day because they had something happen to the water. This was in one of their reservoirs. But, you know, water is not just simply there. It's a real important thing nowadays, and it's a real thing that's going to have to be money spent on it.
Absolutely. I'm doing – apologize for the delay here. But I'm going through my notes here and waiting for a computer to catch up. The reliance on technology. But anyway, speaking of technology, give us a call, 646-721-9887. We've been getting some really good numbers on the archives, but we'd also would like to have you on live as well. It makes it a lot more fun for everybody, and also the different points of view, because we throw a few items out there to talk about, but we always are interested in new items. And give us a call, 646-721-9887.
Yeah, we'd really like to hear from you and have your opinion. You know, you can yell at us and tell us we're wrong if you want to. But please, if you're going to yell at us and give us all kinds of trouble, be prepared for some of it back again, because we'd like to have the opportunity to yell at you too. It's fun. But I would like to hear from somebody, because there's got to be a lot of opinion about the water rights, but you know, you've got a consideration that above all, water rights have been pretty well worked out and worked on in other states and other areas, because we don't have the problem that other people do. But we, again, what's going to be a problem here is we use water in huge amounts to water the crops, and the state of I don't, you've had, well, it's managed. I don't know if it's managed as well here. I know in Washington we have lakes that feed big tubes and big places, and they send the water from the mountains down into the eastern Washington area where it's sold. And again, somebody has to pay for all this to give you water to use, whether it be to water your crops or whether it be to drink. And basically what they do is they send down huge amounts of water, but somebody has to pay for the lakes that they've built to hold that water, to be, get it ready to go down to you, and to manage the lakes, because lakes don't just, well, they do just happen, but if they just happen, they're really not in the right place and the right amount. So they've got to be controlled and cleaned and kept clean, and the tunnels and the tubes and the different things, that different access ways of getting them to you, have to be kept clean, and it's an expensive thing to do. It's not something that just happens.
Well, the state of Oregon actually has a pamphlet out if you're going to be storing water at home, for how you can set it up, the filtration systems you have to have, and all types of fun stuff.
Yes, if you're drinking the water, that's possibly something. But if you're using it to water your fields with and things like that, it's probably a lot better and easier. But it's still just as important to know how to do it, because there are probably rules and regulations as to how to do it on the books right now. And it'll be interesting to watch this case and see what happens to this guy. And it'd be interesting to know more about it than what we've got here, I think.
Kind of changing gears here. This just came out today, actually. Surprising link found in Obama's family tree. Yes, we're back to not the birther thing again, but apparently President Obama is the 11th great-grandson of John Punch, who was the first documented African to be enslaved for life in the American colonies.
Yeah, I saw this on TV. I'm not sure what I want to think about it. That's the whole thing about the Obama thing. The family tree is one thing, and so what if he's traceable to the first? I don't know what you want to call it.
Well, probably means that the government, because the government wanted to apologize to the people that slave culture back then, which was a big mistake in our heritage. And I guess since he is the government, he's going to have to apologize for himself himself and give him reformations for having that in his family.
See, I disagree. This was not a mistake in our history. This was not something that we did wrong in our history. I mean, looking back on it, we think it's wrong now. But at that particular time, it was not wrong. It was the thing to do. Holding slaves was something that was okay. It was accepted, and like it or not, in fact, it's still accepted in some countries in the world. But the thing is, we've decided to change our minds. So consequently, I disagree with this whole business about us going back and supposedly paying for our sins or paying for our errors in how we did things, because there was nothing wrong with them at the time that we did them. We change our mind and come up with different ideas, but again, we shouldn't be paying for something that we did wrong. Otherwise, we'd have to be paying clear back to we should be paying the Indians for everything, and we should be paying not just the Indians here, but everywhere. Because the white people, supposedly the white people, took over from somebody all the time in every country. And we didn't pay them. So, you know, $26 to buy what was in New York or something like that, big thing. But that was paid for. Now we don't need to pay anymore for it. We did it. We did what we thought was right at that time. We paid the person who was in charge, and it's over with. It's not supposed to be continued on forever. And we find that we keep doing this. We come up with something that our conscience is bugging us a little, so we pay it off with money. Well, no, we don't do that. That's not what we should be doing. This is live for today. Yesterday is already done.
Well, I agree with you in a sense that, yeah, that was two or three generations ago. It's done. It's over with. Don't make the mistake again. The people of this generation should not receive any financial compensation for that. I'm not saying that slavery is right in any thing. In fact, even with the illegal aliens, hiring them for less than minimum wage is still slavery. It's wage slavery. Is not right. But, like you said, you know, it's done. We corrected it. We're generations ahead now. Move on.
Well, back in those days, there was no wages. I mean, you owned the person. You let them work and do whatever they wanted to. And they felt lucky to be having a job. Granted, the problem was that how they got here in the first place. We forced them to come here. Well, that was bad, but it's done. It's over with, and there's nothing we can do that's going to fix that. I don't care how much money you spend, you're not going to fix that. And so it's over with. Let's live for today and live the way we should be thinking and make sure it doesn't happen again. There's a lot of things that we're doing, not just in our country necessarily, but around the world. There's a lot of horrible things that are happening right now that we should be concerning ourselves with.
I totally agree with that. Oh, computer's going really slow. Trend Micro decided to do an update, and I couldn't stop it, and that generally brings things to a halt.
Yeah.
Here's something I wanted to throw out, another news item. This kind of affects more of the trucking industry, but it may, well, it probably extends to other. Drug testing. I mean, it's one thing peeing in the bottle, but how do you feel about donating a lock of hair for drug testing?
What's the difference?
The lock of hair allows them to go back 3 months, where peeing in a bottle just goes back a couple days, I guess.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with a lock of hair. Depending on how big a lock is, a lock of hair. I mean, if you have 3 or 4 strands of hair that you can use, or you can take that's no big thing. I mean, so you take 3 or 4 or 5 strands of hair and do something with them, that's fine. But my problem with that, of course, is the same problem with anything else. You're going to have to take real good care of that lock of hair and be real careful of whose it is and how you're doing it. I mean, control over that is real important, because you don't want to get it mixed up and have I don't want to be paying the penalty for somebody else's lock of hair because somebody didn't handle it properly and it got lost and it's in the wrong place. I mean, that's my concern.
Well, here's the thing. If it was just, 3 or 4 strands of hair, that wouldn't be that big of a deal. I agree. But in the company I work for, they do it. And they said they can take it from various places. Well, they decided not to. They decided to take it from the head. And, my hair is very long, over 36 inches long. And what they did is they took a lock of hair about the size of those, not the number 2 pencils, but the bigger ones.
Yeah.
It was a huge chunk of hair that they took out of the back of my head. Like I said, I wasn't given a choice of where, even though the original documentation says they can take it from any place if there's hair. And of course, if you have too many of those done, because this one article I'm looking at are saying they'd like to even have hair follicle testing just on when you're considered for a job or for applicants. It's like, you know, if you have too many interviews, you're not going to have any hair left. But my point is that, you know, to be able to whack off a piece of your body, you know, for whatever reason, just to get a job, I think is wrong.
Well, you know, now that's an interesting thing, because now all of a sudden we become, let's say you, like you say, you want to go out and look for a job, and you're going to go to 20 different places to look for a job. 20 different places are going to take a group of hair pieces, a bundle of hair the size of a pencil. 20 pencils worth is going to start making a huge difference out of your head. And if you do this in a matter of just a couple weeks to try to find a job, you could be real bad shape. There's got to be a system put into place where that information is made available to everyone. In other words, once you've taken that lock of hair off your head and made it available, then the next person that you're going to interview with can have a place to call and get that information from them and find out what that information was. And it can be, you know, because there's a point. Look at all the people in our country that are out of work right now. There's going to be huge amounts of hair. And again, just logistics of the whole thing are going to be really, really important, because, you know, you got to make sure you got the right person that you're getting the information from, and right person that's working with it. It's just a very, very important thing that I don't know if we're handling it as carefully as we should at this point.
Well, again, like I say, it's just where does it end? You know, like say if it was just a couple strands, no big deal. I mean, you lose that much just whenever you comb your hair out. Can you take it from other areas? Well, yeah, you're supposed to have the choice. But when they decide not to, and they decided to grab a big chunk of it, and, you know, like I say, with my hair being over 36 inches long, they can, no, I don't, I've never done drugs, but, you know, they can go back quite a long time on my hair history.
I gotta ask, when they pull that hair out, do they literally pull it out by the roots? I mean, that's going to hurt.
No, they don't pull it out. They cut it at the scalp.
Well, then you're not getting the roots. You're not. So then you can take it from anywhere. That's no problem.
That's what the brochure said.
If they're cutting it, then if you've got a real problem, if they want a whole bunch of it, then cut a little bit from here, a little bit from there. You know, take it about four different places off the top of your head, and you don't have any loss at all. You don't notice it at all. But it's got to be. They should have some sort of a. I mean, they've got blood banks. They've got to have hair banks or something to control who gets that information and make it available to other people that you're working with to try to get a job.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, there's a lot of things that businesses are requiring you to do now that affects your personal life, you know, like cutting off a piece of your body for a job. There's like the thing for sleep apnea testing now, which is, again, affecting, you know, telling you what you can do on your own time in order to keep your job, and you're not even given the choice of treatment. There is, the point is, what's the next thing that's going to happen?
Again, there's got to be I'm sort of drawn against this, because the sleep apnea thing, for example, if you're as a truck driver, who as a person who's going through a problem not being able to sleep, I've got to know about that. I want to know about that, because that's extremely important. In the first place, I disagree with the way they're running their rules and regulations as to how many hours you can work on driving, how many hours you can drive without having any sleep, how many hours you can drive without having any break, for that matter. This has got to be changed, and it's got to be it's kind of, this is a place where you have to have a national change. It can't be done by states. It can't be done by communities. It has to be done nationally because people are driving nationally. They're going across state borders and things, and whether they are or not. I want to know that the person who is driving the vehicle, especially as big as a truck, in front of me is awake or not, and whether or not he's had enough or she has had enough sleep. And so, again, I think the rules have got to be changed. You can drive like 10 hours straight, can't you?
The law allows you to drive a maximum of 11 hours in a 14-hour period. But, you know, with the problem lies is not so much the sleep apnea thing. Now, there's drivers out there that have been tagged with sleep apnea that have had no problems, that have never been drowsy. They just get tagged with it because they may have a big neck or their palate may be a little smaller in the back or they're a little overweight, and so they get diagnosed with it, and they're not given the choice of treatment because only one type of treatment actually has a chip in it to be monitored. The thing is what they're doing is they're putting a Band-Aid on a different problem, which is a lot of it is the scheduling of the loads themselves. For example, nobody, even outside the trucking industry, can work a job one day, say from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and then be told you got to come back to work at 2 a.m. and work until 7 a.m., and then after that you got to come back to work at 3 p.m. and work till 9 a.m., and by the end of the week expect to be alert. And this happens very very often in the trucking industry. Plus, they schedule these ridiculous deadlines that forces the driver to get a little anxious, so to speak, to try and make that load there on time without any, a lot of these loads are scheduled without any type of buffer for traffic or whatever, and when he starts running behind, then, he gets in trouble by the company. Some warehouses and stuff will fine the shipping company if you arrive late or if you arrive too early. See, a lot of that's got to change. And the other thing I think that would make a good change is you start paying the driver by the hour, not by the mile.
Well, again, I think the whole thing has to be changed because basically we've got to start working on a 24-hour period. That's the way people live. That's the way the world runs. And it's not a 10-hour period or 11-hour period or 14-hour period. It's a 24-hour period. Then if we need to go someplace that takes more than 24 hours or more than the 10 hours to get there, you'd be required to have two drivers. Now, I understand that supposedly this is going to cost more money to administer and it's going to cost more money to get things from point A to point B. I'd just as happy to pay a little bit more to get things from point A to point B and not have a chance of worrying about the driver behind me running over me or going off the road in front of me or whatever it is. We've been doing very good, I think, to keep the amount of accidents and the amount of problems went down, but it just doesn't make any sense to me the tremendous rigmarole that we go through to get there. Why not live like other people live and just make the rules conform with the rest of the world?
Well, like I said, there is nothing except for something that's medical, that's perishable, that requires the type of schedules that are put on. That you can't allow, first of all, if you set up a regular schedule, like an 8 to 5 or even a 10-hour day, that, so you have your body's in a rhythm like you would at any other job. You set your deadlines up so that you've got wiggle room. You're going to fix a lot of problems right there, but no, that's not the way it works. Everything has to be done yesterday, and that creates, the majority of the problems. So instead of putting a Band-Aid on it by, requiring the drivers to have a mask stuck to your face whether you need it or not, and because that's the only choice you're allowed to keep your job, and that the thing is, once you're tagged with a sleep apnea, it goes beyond your job. You could give up your CDL, and you're still stuck with that stupid thing. So, but I think that's my opinion on it, and that, yes, some of the rules should be changed. I think the 14-hour rule should be abolished, In other words, I agree with the fact that it to reset your 11-hour driving rule, you have to have a 10-hour break. Great. If it takes me a week to make that 11 hours in driving, I'll be a lot more safer because I'm allowed to pull over and rest. But if things happen and I'm trying to drive my 11 hours and I'm hitting up my 14-hour limit, well, now I'm rushing to try and find a place to park or to try to get to where I need to go because, like, I drive a day cab. And it is currently illegal to sleep in a day cab. But, you know, when you reach that maximum 14-hour day limit, you can't move that truck. But that's also preventing me from pulling over and taking a nap because, you know, once you start your day, you know, that 14-hour clock starts.
Has anybody ever sat down and tried to work through these rules and regulations and come up with a logical alternative for them and submit that to the federal government?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's happening all the time. In fact, they're changing the hours of service next year. The problem is that even though the independent companies have sent reports to the FMCSA, the FMCSA rejects it because it goes against what they want. The major problem is the majority of people that set the regulations have never done the job, and so they're sending it based on their experience of working in an office.
I don't know what to say about that because that makes no sense at all. You need to have somebody who knows what they're doing. That's not necessarily so. To a certain extent, you don't have to drive a truck to know that you shouldn't be spending 24 hours driving without a break. There are logical moves. Again, the thing we think we've got to base this on is a 24-hour period. Everything based on a 24-hour period. If the company that you're delivering to, for example, wants to get their delivery at night because it would disrupt their business to be stocking their shelves in the middle of the day, that's fine. They could have that 24-hour period begin at noon and end at noon instead of at midnight to midnight. It's still based on a 24-hour period, and you're still working the same amount of time. It's just in a different position. But we've got to get back to a 24-hour period because that's the way the rest of the world works, is on that 24-hour period instead of a 12-hour or 11-hour or 10-hour or whatever it happens to be. So I believe that the people who are making the decisions can be making so without having necessarily driven a truck. There are some things that they should know about, and they should have people there who have driven a truck and know how to do it. And I understand that there are a lot of rules and regulations, not just this one. But I don't think that they're going about it in the right way. We've got the wrong people making that decision. It would be interesting to see this trucking industry association or whoever you're talking about, who does that and who makes that decision. And, again, was it President Obama?
I don't think Obama has anything to do with it, although that there are people that do want to put even tighter regulations. The new regulations that are coming up require a 30-minute break within the first 8 hours of going on duty, and your 34-hour restart provision, which is where you have to stop and actually not do anything for a day and a half, which under the current regulations you can take at any time, have been changed that you can only use it once in a 7-day period. And it must include two periods of 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And so if you start at 3 a.m., sorry, that doesn't qualify as one day. So now your 34 just became a 48, which is going to cost a lot of money. And there's also fewer places for people to park. The thing is I blame it on the schedulers. A lot of it is, like I said, if you got a driver that's mainly a daytime driver, don't schedule a delivery at 3 in the morning. You know, put enough. When you do schedule that delivery, yeah, the person's going to say, well, I need this by 12 o'clock. Well, I'm sorry, but we physically can't get it there within those hours without the driver breaking the law and speeding and doing whatever. You know, you're just going to have to plan better by the time you order your merchandise. Sorry.
That's why we have more than one driver. We need to have in the law that there's more than one driver in that case. So if they can get it there at the time and They're making things a lot more difficult than they need to be entirely. They're trying to make a big thing out of a big mole out of a molehill, a mountain out of a molehill, because They're overthinking things, and it isn't necessary. Still, working within that 24-hour period, that 24-hour period can be any time, but a certain amount of that time has to be in sleep and so on and so forth, just like everybody else does. And if you can't, you know, if the driver has to take 14 hours to get there without a job, without a stop, then there needs to be two drivers, not just one. And the idea of not being able to sleep in the truck, that's the whole idea of having a sleeper in the truck, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, okay, now you can't drive 14 hours legally. You know, you can only drive 11. But even still, they expect you, under the rules, they expect you to have an 8-hour sleep break. Well, that's all great if you're a machine. But, you know, if you get to some place, and because we have all these no idle laws and everything, and you get to some place and it's 80 degrees outside, it's 110 in that truck, and you can't idle it to cool it down, so you can't sleep, for one. Or it could be,
we need to revisit the idling law. Why is it there? Why, and what can they do about it? If there's a law that says you can't idle the truck, then there has to be another law that says you have to supply electricity to it.
That's true. But see, there's also, that would be a good thing. But there's auxiliary power units you can put on the truck that use a smaller motor to smaller engine to provide heating, air conditioning, and power. Some companies are too damn cheap. The one I work for, you can't even put an inverter in your truck to provide. You can't go more than 150 watts. Basically, an inverter will go into the cigarette lighter. So you can't have a microwave, you can't have a refrigerator, you know, or anything else for the comfort. And like I say, I've done that. I've had to try and sleep inside of a truck that was so hot that all you're doing is melting, and you can't idle the damn truck because you know, you use about a gallon per hour of fuel, and then the even Oregon has the anti-idling laws, which says you can only idle for 5 minutes for each hour unless the weather is so extreme. California, of course, is more stringent on that. And, you know, again, you got 8 hours to do that before you have to go back on duty again and start running. And if you can't get good rest.
Then if they've got a law that says you can't idle a truck, you can't keep the system running, then there should be another law that says you have to supply some way of getting that electricity there, putting a small generator in or putting in plugs in the side of the road or whatever. Maybe that'll be solved with this electric car thing, but who knows. But the point is, if you can't do one thing, you've got to do another, and they've got to facilitate doing the other thing sooner or later.
Well, you're exactly right, and that's the whole point. If you pass a law saying this, then you need to come up with an alternative. If you have an animal in your car or in your truck, you can idle the truck, which is kind of weird because the animal is more important than you.
We aren't animals.
Well, technically, we are.
That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. And certainly, they shouldn't. If they can. That makes no sense at all. They're just trying to overthink the whole thing, and they're trying to make the thing way too difficult. And that's why I say we need to have somebody, I don't know who it is, who has the final say-so and who does think about things. If it's a committee, that's okay. I'm not really set on committees because they can fight about things for days and days and days and never come up with an answer. But we've got to have it's got to be somebody who has some experience or some group of people who have some experience, and then they've got to come up with a rule. And then that rule has to be for everybody, the entire United States, including the people who operate the warehouses where you're delivering the product to, and the people who are operating the trucking companies who are supplying the equipment. So everybody is on an equal basis. Everybody has an equal footing. And that's obviously got to be a national company or a national committee.
I think one of the first things to do is, like you say, you change the laws. And I hate to get into all these law things, but the trucking industry is not like any other industry. A lot of the labor laws do not apply. Most of us are not paid by the hour. We're not. You know, if you like the job I do, if you break down the time per what I get, there's most days I don't even make minimum wage. If I'm at a shipper receiver and I spend 3 hours there, I don't get paid a dime for sitting there.
I think that's a matter of your opinion, your business as to whether you want to take this job or not. I don't think you have to be paid by the hour. I very seldom ever worked at a job where I got paid by the hour, but I still got paid enough, mostly because I negotiated to get paid enough that no matter how much I worked, I was going to be paid all right. Now, as to how much you pay by the how many dollars you're paid per hour, I've never even considered that, because there are times when I've worked 4 hours a day and got full pay. There are times when I worked 14 hours a day and got full pay, the same amount of pay. And so that doesn't make any difference. And if you're not willing to do that, then find a different job.
Yeah, I'm trying. But anyways, and this is the last thing I'll say on this, and I want to get back more to political stuff. Again, 646-721-9887 is that the trucking industry is one of the most overly regulated industries in the nation, and yet the drivers are considered unskilled labor, technically.
Well, it may be the most over-regulated industry in the world, but the point is it's regulated wrong, because they're not taking everybody into consideration. Anytime a dog is going to take precedence over me in the truck, there's going to be a problem. And so there's got to be some things changed about how they're making the rules. And again, of all the places where we need someone in federal government making these rules, this is the one. And we aren't doing it, obviously.
No, I agree. I totally agree. And it's going to get even worse, but I don't want to go into more details on that. That'd be something for, Charter Talk, because most people don't want to hear about, the trucking industry, which I can totally understand, because it's kind of the underground economy, so to speak.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, it's a lot of concern. Personally, I have an opinion. I believe that these huge trucks should be taken off the road. They should be used. The transportation should be some other way, be it train, rail, however you want to do it, by boat. But they should be taken off the road so that the trucks are short haul trucks. They just go from wherever the stuff is dropped off to someplace in that state. And so it makes a lot of difference in how long you're going to be driving. So there's got to be some basic major changes made in the industry that I think over the next few years in order to make it safe. But right now, I think the biggest problem is that, like you say, they're considered unskilled labor. Maybe we need to change that.
Well, it needs to be revamped, because I mean, they are trying to throw technology in there to take out the stupidity of it, so to speak. But, the best thing to do is to change the classification, because it takes skill to drive that truck and to control it in all different types of weather and to drive it safely and to know what it will do. But they're trying to throw technology in there. We got some trucks that have this sensor on the front of it that if you're in cruise control, it won't let you get more than 350 feet from the car in front of you, and then if somebody cuts in front of you, it locks the brakes up, taking control away from the driver, in my opinion, which again causes even more of a risk. So now it takes a little bit of skill to handle that thing correctly and safely, and you're right, it needs to be overhauled.
Do you need do you need special training to be able to do this,
to drive the truck?
Yeah.
Then it's a big big vehicle. These things are, like mine is 70 feet long.
I know, but you need special training and you need special licenses to do it. Then it's no longer unskilled labor. It's definitely skilled.
Oh, it's skilled labor, but it's technically considered unskilled.
And they need to change the technical.
And that's why they get away with a lot of the exceptions on the wages and a lot of the stuff that they do to the drivers out there. So,
well,
but yeah, it does need to be changed. Anytime you have to go through and take a test, and you have to go through classes, and you have to meet these conditions. It has to be, you know, that's not something like, you know, so-and-so came right off the street, hopped behind the wheel, and away they go. You know, that anybody can do, like bagging groceries, which is unskilled labor. You know, there's a lot of things you got to know and you got to pay attention to. But, you know, even just shifting truck.
Interestingly, announcer for years that I the job that I held, I didn't have any special training to do what I did, and I didn't need to read special training. I just needed to be able to know how to do it. And so technically speaking, I guess I was unskilled labor too, but I was never considered that. Not everybody can do that job, although a lot of people like to think they could. But you set people in front of a control board and in front of a radio station, and they sit there and go, what do we do now? And so consequently, it takes a lot of skill and training to do what you want to do. But technically speaking, I didn't have any special training. I didn't have any special education. Although I know a lot of people who get that special education and still can't do it, so it's another story. It's very hard to decide.
Well, it's like I say, just like sitting here behind this microphone. Well, no big deal. Just get in there and just start talking. Yeah, right. Try doing it by yourself for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Cliff did a great job last week. I've had to do it myself. It's especially when people don't dial that 646-721-9887 number. And then when you try to do it on granted, we are broadcasting worldwide to a small audience at the moment, but like when Cliff was, what was your title at KNND?
Say again?
What was your title at KNND?
I was just an announcer, program director, but that didn't mean anything at all.
Yeah, but you were... You know, when you were broadcasting to a larger live audience, and it doesn't seem like that big a deal until you get the opportunity to sit in front of that microphone, which I chickened out.
Well, you see, I think you'll find out that our audience is much, much larger than you think it is. I would venture to say we have thousands and thousands of people listening in different countries and different parts of the world and who don't indicate anything about it. For example, who don't log into anything or let people know that they're listening. I know a lot of people on krbnradio.com that are listening, that are not probably counted anywhere because they're just listening on our little widget, so to speak, and they can be listening there and not tell anybody. There are, I think, thousands of people listening to us who were not counting and were not accounted for. So it's more than you think it is. It's a bigger thing than you think it is.
Oh, actually, I was just making light of it. Because if you want to get right down to nitty-gritty, and again, I want to thank our audience, who, even though during this time slot we don't have that many live listeners, but in the roughly 129 episodes that we have done so far, we have over 37,000 listeners.
Yeah, that's so, it's a large, you know, it's larger than something you might think. In some of the small radio stations in this United States, you'd think of, okay, in the instance that you're talking, there may be, it seemed like there's a lot more people, but there may not be.
Yeah.
I don't want you to get scared.
Anyways, 6 minutes remaining in the program, 646-721-9887. We kind of got off the main topic, but that happens, and that's okay. Actually, in a way, it's kind of refreshing not to be talking about Obama for a change, and it just shows once again that we love to have you call in, and you can change the direction of the program real easy. I mean, we do it all the time, but sometimes we'll get into a topic that, you know, we're literally screaming at each other, which is fun. That's part of the thing here too. We talk about what's in the news, what's on our mind, and a lot of times have fun doing it. And if you are listening to this program on the archives, again, send us an email. If we miss something or there's something you'd like to talk about, you know, talk at krbnradio.com, or just send an email and say hi. We appreciate that too.
Yeah, and if there's a lot of things you could send an email that would make us think twice about what we said, and maybe we said something wrong in your opinion, you'll tell us if you think it was wrong, because we'll take criticism or even email-type criticism just as well as anything else. But don't expect us to be quiet about it. If you send us something in the email that makes us think or makes us want to talk about it, we'll talk about even the emails on the air. Why not?
Yeah, why not? We'll talk about anything.
Yeah, if we could sit here and talk about what we did for a living before, we can at least talk about that. So we can also talk about the fact now that we're running out of time. So whatever. Next, I invite you to send us an email. Send some sort of a communications. It's talk@carabianradio.com. It's real simple. The email address, you can't get it wrong. Or just go to carabianradio.com and you can click on the email button down there at the bottom and find out what it is. There's a way to send us things and talk to us and get us the information. Oh, I wanted to mention too, this cliff.org. I've been working on cliff.org. I'm going to have a commercial for us sooner or later, but you can click on cliff.org because the United States is not like it used to be. It's getting harder to live here. It's getting more difficult to live here. And protecting your family is one thing that you can do by clicking on cliff.org. And there's lots of things there. There's fun things like when you click on there, you'll see a cannon, which is kind of just a fun thing. It's not a working, not 500 feet or things like that, but it is something that does fire and could make lots of difference. But there's one thing that I wanted to mention on here. We have an emergency rescue hammer, and this has been brought to my attention to put it in your car. It's only $19, and right now if you do it, everything is on sale for 12% off, plus the fact if you'll put in the word July when you're prompted to put in vouchers, you'll save another 10% because you're listening to KRBN Radio. But this is a thing that allows you to get out of your car if you're in the water. I understand it's extremely difficult to break a window once you're in the water, and this would allow you to do it, and as well as it'll cut the seat belts because that's one of the things that doesn't happen. It's a very important, cheap little way to protect yourself when you're in a car accident of some sort. But anyway, cliff.org, it's easy to find, and it's easy to get to.
Yeah, that's assuming you got a car that doesn't have a little tiny window you can actually squeeze out of.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. When you're underwater, you can't get out of them. You can't get them open for some reason or other. And even just rolling a window down, you'd think you'd be able to do that underwater. You can't for some reason. They had a big thing about that and a whole television show that was about that, as well as I've seen advertising about it. But it's very important to have a little thing like this. It's just a simple thing, unless you want to keep a claw hammer in your car.
Well, of course, if you have a concealed carry, that kind of helps too. But now check it out, cliff.org, and check out our main page too as well, krbnradio.com. And like I say, we are out of time. Again, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, or better yet, join us next Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific time. And if you do have an idea, see something in the news that you'd like to talk about, send us an email or join us next week and tell us in person on the phone. So again, 1 p.m. Pacific time next Monday. Hope you'll be there.
I'll be there. Ready and ready.
I'll be there too. Hi, all.
And hopefully without a toothache. Check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.